whole school was just littered with backpacks and blood.
On this day, 20 years ago, one of the earliest modern-day school shootings erupted in the rural working-class community of Springfield, Oregon.
Just put the gun up against Mike's head and pulled the trigger.
At Thurston High School, freshman Kipling Kinkle opened fire on his classmates inside a crowded cafeteria. The incident preceded the more infamous Columbine shooting by nearly a year.
Our innocence has been taken away.
I'm KLCC reporter Brian Bull, and you're listening to The Thurston High School Shooting, 20 Years Later, a special documentary. In the next half hour, we'll revisit the tragic events of May 21, 1998, which left four people dead, two dozen wounded, and the community shocked and reeling in the aftermath. We'll talk with survivors, as well as a former inmate who grew up with Kip Kinkle behind bars. We'll also hear about Kinkle's efforts to have his 112-year sentence reduced, as well as what effects the Thurston shooting has had on those who witnessed it. Outside the main campus of Thurston High School stands a brick and tile wall, along with benches, plaque, and trees. The Thurston Memorial features 25 white tiles symbolizing students wounded on May 21, 1998. Two black ones represent students Mikhail Nicolason and Ben Walker, who died that day. 35-year-old Tony McCown watches students mill on and off the campus, much like he did when he went here.
I've probably been out here a half dozen times or so for different events, and there may be a half dozen other times for just my own thoughts and memories.
McCown was gunman Kip Kinkle's best friend. He says the 15-year-old struggled with mental health issues and had run-ins with authority, but didn't stand out from any other kids at school.
Still to this day, you could pick out 150 students on this campus that look like, talk like, act like, and present themselves like he did. In a way, that's the scariest part.
McCown wrestles, though, with not foreseeing the violence that came to his school May 21, 1998. The day before, Springfield police came to campus after a tip led to a search of Kip's locker. A .32-caliber gun was found, which he had bought from another classmate.
Maybe there would have been another trigger, but I honestly believe if he had not been caught with that gun on that day, that we would not have had May 21st. Was he a ticking time bomb? Possibly. It's just so hard to say.
Don Stone was Thurston High's vice principal and football coach at the time. He recalls Kinkle's response before being led away by police.
I can remember him looking up at me. His eyes were, I just couldn't see anything in his eyes, but nonetheless he said, "Coach, what's going to happen?" And I said, "Well, Kip, we don't have any tolerance for guns on campus. I'm not sure you're going to be with us anymore."
Stone says he was certain that'd be the last he'd see of Kinkle, but he was wrong. Kinkle came back the next morning, heavily armed.
KLCC's Northwest Passage, I'm Tripp Summer. At least three people dead and 24 injured after shootings today.
20 years ago, most phones were still landlines. The nation's schools were open campuses. Social media was unheard of, and school shooter had yet to become a familiar term.
The suspect is a 15-year-old freshman.
Jolene Liu was a junior at Thurston. She recalls hanging out with friends in the cafeteria that morning. There were kids outside campaigning for student elections and a senior honor breakfast across the hall.
So there was a lot of activity going on anyway, but it switched when we heard the popping. And not growing up around guns, I had no idea what the noise was.
Another junior, Bettina Lynn, figured some of the student campaigners had actually brought fireworks into the building.
And I felt something impact me from behind in my back. No idea what it was. Possibly it was a firework, but it was a really powerful impact. At this point, I was very, very angry. Like, who's pulling a stupid prank that's putting us all in danger? I turned around and the moment the second bullet hit my foot, I noticed the gun.
Kip Kinkle had arrived with a .22-caliber rifle, two pistols, a knife, and more than 1,000 rounds of ammunition. Clad in a trench coat, he walked through the cafeteria, letting bullets fly. Jolene Liu recalls after her boyfriend was hit, turning towards Kinkle and seeing his expression.
Anger. Just plain anger. I wouldn't say that he targeted my table, but my table of friends was the one that was hit the most.
By this point, Bettina Lynn was struggling to hide under a table as Kinkle advanced on the panicked mass of students.
I watched as my friends got shot. I watched the six or seven kids tackle and dogpile on top of Kip. I heard books hitting the floor. I heard screams. I heard hysteria. I heard people running for the exits.
One person pushing against the tide was Don Stone. He'd been across the hall, cleaning up after the senior breakfast when he heard the gunfire. He came into the cafeteria and found one of his players shot in the leg.
And he was spurting blood. I grabbed his hand and slapped it down on his leg and said, "Keep pressure on that." Raced over to the back door. I slowly opened up the door to one of our breezeways. Two young men. One was kind of slumped down. I could see he had taken a wound to the face. He was still very conscious. I pushed him up against the wall and immediately heard one of my other football players saying, "Hey, coach, I need your help." He was trying to do CPR on a young man by the name of Ben Walker.
16-year-old Ben Walker would die within 24 hours. 17-year-old Mikhail Nicholson was shot in the head point blank and died on the scene. Another junior, Tony Case, was on the floor. He had been hit four times. Case recalls a paralyzing numbness and weakness.
"And I was trying to pull myself up to sit on the bench of the table. And there was a girl next to me, like watching me struggling to try and get up on this bench. And she's like, maybe you should just stay there on the ground." I was like, "Yeah, okay, I guess that's a good idea."
A few blocks away, Springfield Patrol Officer Russ Boring was at a gas station. He got a call of a shooting at Thurston High.
When that call first came in, you'd think, well, maybe this is a hoax or something like that. But then as we were driving to it and we were getting more details, we realized, no, this was really happening.
When Patrolman Boring arrived at the school, two other officers, Donnie Myers and Dan Bishop, were already trying to help victims and look for any other shooters. Within the span of 5 minutes, Kip Kinkle had fatally wounded two students and injured two dozen more.
It's chaotic. People are running around and people are in a state of shock. And Officer Bishop had Kip Kinkle on the ground, and we had fire personnel that were already on the scene. They helped them triage some victims out in that hallway that were severely wounded.
With Kinkle in custody, police went to check on his parents. Detectives entering the isolated Sylvan home were met with a surreal and grisly scene. The bodies of Bill and Faith Kinkle were found in separate rooms as music, Wagner's Liebestod, which literally means love death, looped full blast on a CD player. It's believed Kip Kinkle was ashamed of his pending expulsion, especially as his parents were both accomplished and respected educators in town. In an interview conducted by Detective Al Worthen, Kip talked of feeling he had no other option, as well as having voices inside his head.
"I didn't want to. I love my dad, that's why."
"You love him, so that's why you had to kill him?"
There had been talk among classmates that Kip's relationship with his father was strained at times. After his removal from school on May 20th, it's speculated that the elder Kinkle was looking into military school or a similar program for his son. Once home, Kip retrieved a .22 caliber rifle he'd stashed away, shot his father in the back of the head, then dragged the body into a bathroom.
"Why did you cover him with a sheet?"
"It felt like the right thing to do."
"You did it out of respect for him?" "Okay. When did you decide in your mind that you had to kill your mom? Before you shot your dad?"
Afterwards.
"Afterwards?"
"My dad kept saying, oh, my mom was just how embarrassed she was going to be and how horrible I was. I couldn't let my mom be like that. I couldn't do anything else. There's no other way."
Faith Kinkle arrived later with groceries. After Kip helped her, he told her he loved her, then shot her several times. She was found in the basement by authorities. As for the two dozen students wounded in the attack at Thurston, they'd been rushed to two local hospitals. Tony Case, with three bullets in his back and one in his leg, ended up at Sacred Heart Hospital.
And the surgeon, he definitely worked miracles with what he had to work with. I mean, I came in and was essentially gone at that point, and he revived me and not only saved my life, but got me back to where I'm still able to do everything that I want to do.
For many survivors, it would be months, even years, before they recuperated from their physical wounds. Emotionally, many still contend with nightmares, flashbacks, and PTSD. Jolene Liu says she struggled with emerging from the attack unscathed.
"It's a hard situation when a lot of your close friends have been injured in a shooting and they have the scars or the pangs from their injuries. It kind of creates a distance between those who just witnessed it and those who actually gone through it. So I felt like because I wasn't shot that I didn't deserve the title of survivor.
In the days to come, satellite trucks and reporters from across the globe descended upon Springfield. Amidst the media blitz, mourners appeared and began leaving notes, flowers, photos, and stuffed animals on one of Thurston High's fences. Then Vice Principal Don Stone remembers.
People letting us know that they support us, that was a great reminder for the kids when they returned to school the next week. A lot of consciousness raised by not only the community of Springfield, but the state of Oregon. We received all kinds of things from schools, almost every school in the state. It was very heartwarming to see that.
The incident touched those beyond Oregon, too. President Bill Clinton spoke of the tragedy in his Memorial Day address that year.
And my thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families. Like all Americans, I am struggling to make sense of the senseless and to understand what could drive a teenager to commit such a terrible act. And like all Americans, I am profoundly troubled by the startling similarity of this crime to the other tragic incidents that have stunned America in less than a year's time in Paducah, Kentucky, Jonesboro, Arkansas, Pearl, Mississippi, and Edinburgh, Pennsylvania.
Weeks later, President Clinton visited Thurston High School. Again, Don Stone.
He said some amazing things to the kids. He met with the victims and their parents. I can remember saying to him, "It's amazing that you're here." And he says, "I'm not amazing. Your kids are."
The president and his staff wore blue ribbons as part of a promise campaign to, quote, "let it end here." But as the coming decades would reveal, the bloody shooting at Thurston High was just the beginning of a long chain of gun violence in America's schools, including one that would be even more notorious the following year in Colorado, at a high school called Columbine. You're listening to The Thurston High School Shooting, 20 Years Later, here on KLCC. I'm Brian Bull. In 1999, Kip Kinkle was sentenced on 4 counts of first-degree murder and 26 counts of attempted murder. For many victims' families and survivors, Kinkle's 112-year sentence without parole brought some relief. But the echoes of Kinkle's attack still resonate to this day.
I am still defensive about school shootings, and I'm still affected when I hear about one.
For Jolene Liu, the shooting, or rather its ripple effects, changed her career path. She recalls the deluge of media on the small community of Springfield, especially the long row of satellite vans lining the street outside Thurston High.
Reporters will literally walk up to you, camera and face and everything, and start talking to you rather than asking you if you want to be talked to. About a year later, was set up by my boyfriend's mom to help another out-of-town reporter cover the trial. He wanted me to cold call survivors and introduce him before handing him the phone rather than asking them if they wanted to be interviewed, and I was not okay with that.
Those experiences made Liu change her mind about becoming a journalist. Now a mother of three still living in the area, Liu finds a therapeutic joy in her photography, a business she started 5 years ago.
I do weddings, and my favorite part of weddings are always the toasts. They're always the most emotional or the most funny, and you get the best natural reactions during the toast.
In trying to move on, Liu has done her best to gird herself whenever she and her kids go to see fireworks or concerts or any crowded place where loud poppy noises can erupt at any given time. She says her first real scare is when doctors informed her that her first child's due date was May 21st, 5 years to the day of the Thurston school shooting. She was relieved when the baby arrived on May 23rd instead.
In hindsight, it might have brought a little more joy and peace to the day rather than remembering the day so tragically every year.
These guys came through, started shooting, and had grenades and were just throwing them
around. The bloody legacy of Thurston has continued in school shootings that include Columbine, Sandy Hook, and more recently, Parkland, Florida.
Of schools in the nearby area and a library to try and reunite with their children.
The March for Our Lives movement, which surged nationally in the weeks following, inspires another Thurston survivor, Bettina Lynn. She spoke at the Eugene rally in March.
I ask all of you here today to commit to this fight, to speak out, to put pressure on other members of our community, to run for office, to not back down in the face of opposition.
Lynn works as the Executive Senate Coordinator at the University of Oregon. She was shot in the lower back by Kip Kinkle, with another bullet striking her foot. Nerve damage from that wound still affects her physically, and she suffers from PTSD. Thankfully, she finds joy and comfort in a four-legged friend.
My beautiful little varmint, Bacardi, who is part beagle, part corgi, and serves as both pet and sort of companion animal, sort of an emotional support animal.
Lynn says that emotional support was lacking when she returned to Thurston High after the shooting.
I would walk down hallways, and I would consistently have lots of people staring at me. Not a lot of chatter or whispering, but people just staring at me and waiting for me to pass. It was very bizarre and very uncomfortable, like I was no longer part of my high school.
Bettina recalls when her history class showed a video on the Vietnam War. She was prepared to hear gunfire and see violent content. What she didn't anticipate was hearing popping sounds outside the building during the viewing.
My teacher stopped the video, looked at me, and said, "I hope that's not what I think it is." I left that class scared and triggered, and I found a hallway and cried for a while. And then I eventually found my way to the principal's office because I wanted to talk to somebody. The principal tried to convince me it was a car backfire and was very dismissive of my experience. That was it.
Lynn transferred to another school her senior year and graduated. She has since joined an online group of mass shooting survivors that's helped her find a sense of support and acceptance. And she's even inspired a new generation of activists back at Thurston.
20 years down the line, we're still deluding ourselves. Today that changes. Today we demand sensible gun control.
In this phone video shot March 14th, Thurston High School junior Rio Samaniego talks to classmates during a walkout. He says Bettina Lynn's story touches on vital issues, including gun control, school security, and mental health. Yet he says the school and Springfield community seem ambivalent about the tragic events of May 21st, 1998.
The way that they've chosen to remember these people doesn't necessarily inspire us, right? It's not something that tells us, you know, these people had lives. We just see two tiles on the memorial outside. That's pretty much it. That's why I'm interested in hosting a vigil, actually, on the anniversary of the shooting, to make sure that people do remember the people who had lives there who were changed. You know, we don't talk about it nearly as much as we should.
Some survivors say they'll go to Thurston High on the 20th anniversary to remember those who died or were wounded. A few say they'll hold more private ceremonies, including one critically wounded survivor who came off the operating table, rose to his feet, and literally reached for the stars.
3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
I'm currently working at the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. We build scientific instruments for spacecraft.
20 years ago, Tony Case was rushed to Sacred Heart Hospital with 3 bullets in his back and 1 in his leg. His intestines, lungs, and appendix were hit, and he had lost a lot of blood. At one point, the doctors weighed amputating his leg.
Thankfully, my surgeon was on the side of let's not amputate and see how it goes. So he left the leg on, and I can still run, I can still bike, I can still ski, and I can do all of those things with very little impediment at this point. I walk with a little bit of a limp, but most of the times it's not even noticeable.
Case lives in Massachusetts now, where he continues to develop technology for space exploration. He's witnessed many of his projects launch from Cape Canaveral. He's currently a team member on the Parker Solar Probe, which launches in July.
We are building an instrument, much like other instruments that make measurements near Earth, but we're building it out of new materials that are able to get extremely hot, and we're flying very close to the sun's surface in order to measure particles in a new environment.
Kay says he doesn't dwell much on the Thurston shooting or the motivations of Kip Kinkle on that day, but he does mark the occasion with those who helped him survive.
I've actually become really good friends with the surgeon and anesthesiologist that worked on me. Every May 21st, we at least send around an email between my parents, me, my doctors, all of us just sort of saying thank you to the doctors, mostly, for giving me a second chance at life.
And while Kip Kinkle's parents were among the first victims, their memory and names survive in a way friends think they would have appreciated. Every year since the shooting, the Bill and Faith Kinkle Scholarship is awarded to four qualified students who study foreign languages. Gladys Campbell and Ray LaMarche are former Spanish teachers who are involved with the scholarship.
I would read a short description of the formation of that scholarship in honor of the Spanish teachers that died in a horrific event.
It does allow us to remember two good friends of students. They were beautiful people.
You know, if you saw them, you were like immediate friends. They were just kind and open.
Nearly 70 scholarships have been awarded to date, totaling roughly $35,000. But Campbell adds the scholarship's funds are dwindling. Many teachers who used to contribute through payroll deductions have retired. Springfield educators hope to keep the scholarship alive to further the mission and memory of Bill and Faith Kinkle. You're listening to The Thurston High School Shooting, 20 Years Later, here on KLCC. I'm Brian Bull. To this day, many people wonder about Kip Kinkle, his activities today, as well as why he attacked a school 2 decades ago. Some note his parents let him go off Prozac in the months before the incident. Others say Kinkle contended with bullying and anger issues. Bettina Lynn was a teaching assistant in Kinkle's Spanish class.
There were a lot of people who very often went out of their way to make him feel like an outsider, to ostracize him, to tease him, to make his life really hard and uncomfortable.
Kip's history included counseling sessions, experimenting with guns and explosives, and being grounded for pranks. He seemed intrigued by recent school shootings in Arkansas and Pennsylvania. Once in custody, Kinkle was interviewed by a Springfield police detective about the attack against his classmates and the murder of his parents. The boy referred to voices and his head not being right.
You told me that your mom gets out of the Explorer and starts up the stairs from the garage or basement, is that right?
Yes.
Do you say anything to her?
Yes. I told her I loved her.
And then you
God damn, these voices are fucking my head!
All right,
those voices were expected to play heavily into Kinkle's defense during the trial, but he dropped his claim of insanity, pleading guilty to 26 counts of attempted murder and 4 counts of first-degree murder. Former Thurston High School Vice Principal Don Stone credits Kip's sister Kristen for sparing Springfield a painful revisit of the tragedy.
Previous to Kip's trial, she basically talked him into just pleading guilty. She felt strongly that he shouldn't put the community through, in essence, a second shooting, the trial.
On the spring afternoon, Tony McCown sits at the Thurston Fence, a concrete and tile memorial to Kinkle's victims. He watches his current students mill on and off the campus like he and Kinkle used to before the shooting.
Kip was certainly one of my best friends.
While some people have painted Kinkle as a schizophrenic youth influenced by shock rock, gun culture, and bullying, McCown says the friend he knew didn't particularly stand out as a troubled soul. He says he visited and wrote Kip frequently after he was sent to the McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in Woodburn. Kinkle was transferred to the Oregon State Correctional Institution in 2007. McCown says he's only visited his friend recently, but Kip has kept busy.
Since he's been in prison, he's finished a bachelor's degree, he's received his electrical license, and he's become the prison's electrician. He teaches yoga in the mental health ward of the prison. He's got a little odd-centered piece to him.
Kinkle himself has not granted any media interviews. His sentencing remains under appeal and was recently upheld by the Oregon Supreme Court. However, a former inmate, who also served time for a violent offense committed while a youth, spent nearly 6 years with Kinkle at the state prison in Salem. To protect his identity, we've electronically altered his voice. We'll also call him David. He tells KLCC that he was struck by Kip Kinkle's transition to a fairly dangerous place.
A lot of the times, other individuals, especially with high-profile cases, gang members and the rest, will attack you pretty quickly. They'll see it as an opportunity to score points in their gangs. So within the first month or so that he was there, he was attacked. Some man came behind him and struck him, hit him, you know, one or two times. It was on the yard, and that's usually where those attacks happen. He handled himself well. He didn't strike back, which is really the rule of the prison. You let the guards manage that.
David confirms that Kinkle is now an electrician at the facility. He's also worked in the prison library, and when he's not exercising, is a voracious reader.
One of the first Connect books that we really read together was James Joyce's Ulysses. He really enjoyed that. It's another great one. Crime and Punishment was a book we explored together. So, you know, he reads a lot of poetry. He reads a lot of lit, and he's reading it mostly not just to educate himself, but, you know, kind of understanding broader humanity.
Among Kinkle's recurring visitors are ministers, suggesting he's found religion. David puts it this way.
I don't know about religion, I'd say spirituality. And I think spirituality is part of a way to deal with sort of the moral challenges of having hurt so many people. Any sort of tragedy like this, there's no fixing it, there's no repairing it. And I think relying on meditation and prayer and thought towards people who have been harmed is really kind of his spiritual practice in big part.
Kinkle says very little about May 21st, 1998, according to his friends. McCown says that even extends to his correspondence.
He's presented it in a way that he doesn't want to hurt anybody, and he's cognizant that written words could hurt people. So he's very brief and concise in his letters, whether it's education or faith or meditation and yoga. He's taken a lot of steps to make sure he can function. I think that living with those demons made it really hard to function for years.
Just this month, the Oregon Supreme Court upheld Kinkle's sentence, affirming rulings from two other courts. Kinkle's defense is seizing upon several Supreme Court rulings in the last decade that they say can help reduce his sentence. Portland attorney Andy Simmons is a 2012 case, Miller versus Alabama, ruled that mandatory life sentences without parole are unconstitutional for crimes committed by juveniles. Simmons says it's unlikely Kinkle will survive his time.
He's got to live to be 127 years old, which is longer than any human in recorded history has lived so far.
Simmons adds there's a possibility Kinkle's case could reach the nation's highest court.
We can file what's called a petition for a writ of certiorari. It's like an application to get the case directly into the U.S. Supreme Court. And if you've got a good federal issue that they haven't written on before, then there is some chance that they may be interested.
Tony McCown says were his friend ever to be released ahead of his 112 years, there'd be hard questions.
Do I personally think that if you let Kip out, that he'd be a risk? Probably not. Would society be a threat to him? Yeah, probably. And then, I mean, as a country, we have to consider what our incarcerated people can contribute anyway. And in a way, Kip's demonstrated that you can. I mean, I think that he is having an impact inside prison in a way that most people don't.
And David adds that for all his exchanges with Kinkle, he's never talked with him about seeing a world beyond prison walls. But he understands that should Kinkle be released, there'd be resentment and fear in any community he lives in.
I think that's a reasonable fear, as he'll readily admit. I mean, the level of harm that has happened, you know, it's impacted the community, it's impacted so many people. There's definitely resentment and desire not to see him released. And I think he recognizes that. Kip isn't dismissive of it, and he understands the level of harm that he's caused.
Many victims and witnesses we talk to say Kip Kinkle is best left behind bars. But one says he's giving serious thought to visiting Kinkle 20 years after he sprayed the cafeteria with bullets. Former vice principal Don Stone, who had Kinkle removed from school for having a handgun in his locker, says it's been on his mind a lot lately.
I'm struggling with this, but I would like to visit him in prison and feel for myself if, in fact, he is remorseful in terms of what happened that morning.
But first, says Stone, he'll meet up with a former student and survivor who's asked him to join her at the Thurston High School cafeteria next time he's back in Springfield. He says when they connect later this spring, they'll stand in the space where the tragic events of May 21st, 1998 unfolded, and share a moment of reflection and hopefully healing. Brian Bull, KLCC News.